Welcome to Karen's Couch. Welcome to this week's episode, which is just all about inspiration. You know, there's one thing that's, you know, becoming more and more of a reality in today's society, and that is addiction. Food addiction, sex addiction, drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and today I wanted to lift the lid on drug addiction. It's something that we don't talk about. It's something that's not discussed, yet it's a real reality. You know, I think that our kids are suffering, and I think that our parents are suffering. There are people that I know that are in their late 40s, late 50s, and even 60s that are still struggling up against drug addiction. And it struck me as remarkably curious that it's not discussed, it's not spoken about. Therefore, the mechanisms for healing and recovering, it's limited. It's really limited. So today I wanted to bring you somebody who comes all the way from Canada or British Columbia, who has had an experience of drug addiction in her own family. I brought you June Ariano Jakes. And June has a son, one of five, who's been, I guess, up against the battle of a drug addiction for the last 23 years. And her son, Nathan, is still on that path. He's still struggling and still working towards, I guess, ultimate recovery. And I want to talk to June today because I want to know if recovery is even something that enters into the language of somebody who's been up against an addiction for so long. What is addiction? How does it pick one person and miss another? Is it an illness or is it something that we create for ourselves? And I really want to get to the bottom of it. I want to lift the lid on it. So join me today in welcoming June Ariano Jakes to Karen's Couch. Welcome to the couch, June. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with us. You know, we were just having a quick chat off air for all of our listeners and viewers. We were just having a very quick chat off air about, I guess, the stigma that's associated with drug addiction. And it is something that we don't talk about, and it is something that we need to bring awareness to if we're going to create change. And we also need to create, we need to bring a bit of education to the subject, because I think we don't know why, you know, and this is a question I'm really going to pose to you initially, June, is why does drug addiction affect some and not others? How does it even happen? How did it happen to Nathan?
You know, Karen, that's an excellent question, and I'm really, really glad you asked that. When Nathan was just before his 14th birthday, he was hit by a truck getting off a bus. He sustained massive injuries. He broke both his legs, his kneecaps, all his ribs. He ruptured his spleen, damaged his left kidney, his left lung. He went into congestive heart failure.
It's lucky he survived.
It's lucky he survived. But the interesting thing about it is years later, he told me that he loved the feeling that he got with the pain medication. And that was at 14. And so I really do believe, like I have five children, as you mentioned. Four of them have absolutely no addiction issues as far as drugs or alcohol, you know. And, you know, shoe shopping, yes.
I can relate to that. Just putting that out there.
Exactly. But, you know, none of them struggle with addiction. And Nathan's addiction has taken him to some of the most horrific places. And I truly do believe, you know, so many people think of addiction as a moral choice. And I think drug use, the first time you use it, that's a moral choice.
Right.
But once addiction raises its ugly head, and it is an ugly head, it's not that same moral it's not in that same moral choice category anymore. It does become a disease.
So just on that point, from the place of moral choice where it's possibly and potentially just experimental, everybody else is doing it, there's peer pressure involved, you know, we want to fit in, it's socially acceptable. From that point to the point of addiction, from your experience, What's the time frame? Is that there a number of usages, or what do you think takes a person from it being moral choice to an addiction? What's the bridge in there?
You know, for some people, Karen, it could be as early as the first time.
Right.
When Nathan first started using, there was a group of four friends and himself. They used the same substances from the same dealer at the same time.
And what were they, June?
Initially it started off just with marijuana. I'm really one of those people that sits on the fence with it.
Yeah.
You know, if people want to smoke marijuana, if they're not hurting anybody or anything, that's not something that I sort of jump into and have an opinion on in that way.
Yeah.
But for someone that, like my son, who is an addict, his quickly progressed. So where these five young men all started on the same thing, they quickly went then to cocaine and mushrooms and, you know, things like that. But three of the five, one of them became a plumber, one became a doctor, and one became a policeman.
Oh, wow.
For them, they could be involved in the drug scene, but they could leave it whenever they chose to. But for Nathan and one of his friends, addiction really did take a hold of them. And their lives have been filled with, you know, horror, with beatings and stabbings and being held against their will. And, you know, everything and anything that you can fathom. You know, when we see things on television,
yeah,
and we think this is a TV story, but when you're dealing with hardcore drug addiction, that's the reality. And it's happening every day in our towns and in our cities, on our streets and in our homes with people that are struggling.
June, you know, I have to say that that just your analogy there of your son's friends, where three of them were able to, you know, move on and move away from drugs, where if two of them got caught in it, just that there speaks volumes to a potential truth that addiction is an illness and a person has a predisposition for it, as opposed to, as you say, it being a moral choice and you're just a bad person.
You know, I agree with you 100%, Karen. It's really interesting how I often use an analogy of drug addiction and a puppet master and a marionette.
Right.
When the drug addiction really takes hold, that drug becomes the puppet master. And an addict will do anything that they need to do for that puppet master, for that drug. And as parents, you know, they will steal everything you have. Over the years, I've spent $460,000 on treatment programs for my son.
Oh, June, this is amazing.
So it's not just, you know, he became addicted and he was kind of left to his own devices.
No.
He's been in treatment programs.
Wow,
this is the best in Canada and in the United States. But his addiction was so powerful that each time he came out, he was right back in a very short period of time back to using. Now, when we see the poverty and the hunger and the violence and the homelessness that goes hand in hand with addiction, I can't believe that somebody willingly would choose that if it didn't have this incredibly powerful hold. I do believe addiction is an illness. At the same time, it is an illness with a choice.
Right.
You know, whereas, and we have to treat it differently because of that. You know, if you had a child that had leukemia or AIDS from a blood transfusion or whatever condition, we would nurture and care for and do everything and anything we could for a child to keep them comfortable.
True.
Unfortunately, with addiction, the more, and it is a disease, But the more comfortable we keep that person with the disease of addiction,
yeah,
the longer it allows them to stay in that addiction.
So I guess, it's a double-edged sword there, because as a mother, and you know, I'm just going to make a general assumption here because I'm not a mother, so I can't even begin to imagine the pain and the turmoil that yourself and your family have been through with Nathan. And I can imagine the feeling, this intense sense of being torn between, do I love, support, nurture, make him comfortable, you know, not make him wrong, not blame him, because, you know, whatever we resist, I believe it persists.
Right.
You know, so how do you support your son without becoming an enabler to the very addiction that's robbing him of his life and robbing you of your son?
You know, that is something that I think every parent will be able to identify with what you're saying. We have so many professionals that talk about it, treat addiction, but they're thinking solely with their head, with their mind.
Yeah.
They know what's right, what's wrong, what works.
Yeah.
But as parents, we have that information. But not only are we thinking with our heads, we're also thinking with our hearts.
Of course.
And it's very hard, you know, to say to your child, you have to do this, or the result is you're out of my home.
And is that what you had to do?
No, not for a very long time. What I really did, Karen, is I tried to do everything. And I mean, this is now 23 years ago. You know, there were no shows like Karen's Couch that was willing to take a chance on speaking about this. There were no Dr. Phil's or interventions.
Yeah.
So you were going through the motions trying to figure out what the best thing would be. And parents are still doing that today. I talk to moms in particular. Dads too, but moms seem to hang on for a lot longer than dads do for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And you know, they say the same thing. It's very, very hard to distance yourself. I think what we have to remember as parents, especially when the addiction progresses year after year, is that eventually we stop having expectations that this will be the time. But we always have to have hope. And for me, I try to, you know, I will show you how much I love you, how much I'm there for you, what I will give up for you.
Yeah.
Hopes that would build that self-esteem. But that's not the sole issue. And mind you, people struggling with addictions, they are truly, truly suffering people. I retired 4 years ago, Karen, and I volunteer in a mission and a shelter here in British Columbia, about 200 hours a month. And I've met, like my son, some of the most wonderful men and women, kind and generous and gentle, just as my son is, who battle addiction. And it changes the person. And I think as parents and as people, we have to remember, and I really do this, I'm very, very aware that there are two people. There is my son, and there's my son on drugs.
They're
very separate. So anything that he says to me, and sometimes it can be really harsh, because when you say no, that addict is not going to fight you every step of the way.
Because
he doesn't want to hear, no, I'm not going to help you.
Mm.
So, you know, you may get that, you know, that yelling and that name calling. But I remember, no, this is my son on drugs. This is not my son.
I think that's a very powerful point that you've made there, is the distinction between the two. And then also, as you say, you don't have expectations, but you do have hope. I think that potentially is a real aha moment for our viewers and our listeners who either have a similar experience or know people who've had experiences with addictions. You know, it strikes me as remarkable, because whenever we do hear or see of people, you know, of what's in the general public. Is that your phone, my love?
Oh, I'm just putting it away.
It's okay. It's one of the reasons. It's one of the reasons why we don't edit Karen's Couch, because life continues to happen from beginning to end. It's raw. But what strikes me as curious is that when we think about drugs and we see it on telly, or you know, we know people who've experienced it, there seems to come a time where there has to be a point where the people who love the drug addict have to say, I'm not going to support your habit and I'm not going to support your choice because I know that it's not in your best interests. So if you continue to choose that way, there's going to be a consequence, as you were saying before.
Absolutely.
So does that then drive the addict when they are under the influence of drugs and they're not their normal selves? Does that then drive them onto the streets, you know, sifting through garbage bins, going through, you know, stealing money, doing whatever they can to get their next fix? When that occurs, what does that do to the family? What does that do in terms of you actually having to watch and witness the person going through the worst in order for them to find, possibly with hope, their best again?
It's absolutely devastating. Because you know that they are going to go downhill.
You do know that.
Yeah. With Nathan, I know he truly, truly loves his family. Yeah. He loves us.
Yeah.
But he loves drugs more. And
wow, that's a big statement.
And it is a fact in that when a person is heavily into their addiction, they love you, but they will throw you under the bus for that next fix, because that fix becomes so powerful and all-consuming. It's the first thing an addict will think of when they wake up in the morning. What do I have to do to get the money, to buy the drugs, to get me through the next 4 hours or whatever? And then So it's a constant thing where they won't stop to think, you know, I just stole my brother's bass guitar, or I just stole my sister's bicycle, or I just took my mother's credit card.
Yeah.
They are only thinking, like, addiction is an extremely selfish disease in that an addict is thinking in terms of, what do I have to do to get the drugs to stop my pain? You know, with opiate use, my son, he is addicted to heroin, to crack cocaine, and this past year, crystal meth as well.
Wow.
Now, the different drugs affect people in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, with heroin, it's a definitely physical. When you don't have it, you are physically sick.
Right.
So to stop that pain, the recourse is, let me just go and get the stuff to stop my pain, and now I'm fine.
And I suppose it's like you say, the drug then becomes the puppeteer, and the person is not the same person anymore. So it's logical that they're not going to be thinking the same way. They're just, as you say, they're suffering. And anybody that's suffering wants to bring their pain to an end. It sounds, you know, like I'm really getting a sense of, I guess, the struggle that you've been through. June, you must be one of the most inspiring women I think I've ever met, because I'm sitting here looking at you completely composed and completely clear and focused on the fact that you want to bring awareness and education to society about the reality that we're facing so that we can start to make a change. Where do you think the best place in society to create that change or to begin that change occurring, where does it start?
You know, I heard something once, Karen, and I think of this often. It is much easier to raise healthy children than it is to fix broken adults.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Just recently here in British Columbia, we do, every 3 years, we do a homelessness count. In other words, seeing where the numbers are for people that are struggling. And most people that are struggling and living in homelessness, it is because of drug or alcohol addiction, right, mental illnesses, you know, primarily. Now, some people, you know, there's economic reasons as well, but primarily those are the reasons. And we've been finding over and over again, and this is not all people, because addiction falls, we know it's in every area, from people that have been deeply loved to people who have been minimally cared for.
Absolutely. People, it's random.
People from wealth to people that have lived in poverty, people that were loved. So it's in every category. But what we've been finding more and more is that the greatest majority of people battling addictions are people that have been sadly in the foster care system.
Right.
And that tells me that not only do we have a drug problem, we have a foster care problem. There are so many people that are kind, loving, wonderful people who take in children that aren't theirs. But how many of those children may think, I'm only here because of the money you get?
Oh, wow.
Or, do you know what I mean? And also many people that have been entered the foster care system, it has been because they have been abused or hurt or witnessed, you know, horrific things.
Mm-hmm.
So there is baggage. But when we look at that and see that many people, those numbers, 40% in some places, mm-hmm. we have to say that's a problem. So we have to be caring for and loving and nurturing children if we expect our children to grow up to be healthy adults. And that's not putting any blame on people like myself or any other parent that has people struggling with addiction, because I truly believe that we do the very, very best that we can with the information we have at any given time.
I agree with you, and that's no doubt a question that you've asked yourself personally, you know, as a mother, you know, in terms of what was the difference? Why did it choose Nathan and it didn't choose the kid next door? Why?
Totally. And, you know, as parents, I think, and this message goes out to mothers and fathers who have young children now growing up, is, you know, we're used to the idea that when something breaks, we fix it.
That's so true.
And all of a sudden, you know, you have something that you can't control over. And you think, because I know I did, I thought, if I've done such a great job, then how could this have happened? It must be my fault. I must have, as a mother, done something wrong, mm-hmm. or my son would not be turning to drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And in his case, he told me, you know, Mom, I was just curious.
Bless
there was no more than that. He said, you know, I could try and pull all kinds of things out of a hat and blame a whole lot of things, but the bottom line is I was curious. I wondered what the big deal was about. And,
You know, I am a big believer, and everybody who follows this program, I guess, knows me by now, in that I'm a big believer in that everything has to have a purpose. Everything has to have a reason. There has to be a reason why we experience the life journey that we individually experience. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, there's got to be something grander involved in our experiences, and I go in ferocious pursuit of looking for that, because it gives life meaning then, and it gives me answers as to why people like yourself and Nathan and no doubt your four kids, you know,
yes.
and Nathan's father and the rest of your family, you know, it affects everybody. It's not just one person that has that journey. Everybody goes on the ride with them in their own individual way.
Yeah. I often think, Karen, when you're using the ride analogy, I often think of it's like you're in a car with no steering wheel and you're on there for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer, the only thing I can say is be very careful and know when to get out of that car. Because with addiction, as a family member, you are in for the ride of your life, and it will take you to some pretty horrific places. And people treat others with addiction very differently mm-hmm. than they would treat you and I. I'll give you an example, if that's okay. I had been in the hospital for back surgery, and when I got out, this was a couple of years ago, hit my machine, answering machine, and one of the messages was for my son. And he said, "Mom, you've got to help me. I've been hit with a bat, and I'm bleeding." And then the phone went dead. What had happened is he had been working. He came out of the bank, and he was jumped, in all likelihood, by other people battling addiction. Mm-hmm. He was hit with the baseball bat 18 times. He had a concussion. He had to get numerous staples in his head, on his body. He was battered from head to toe. And initially you think, okay, that's overkill. Who did you owe money to? You know, was this a retaliation for something? And he said, no, I had no idea who these people were. Now, as a society, I look at it, and about 4 days later, there was an article in the paper. It was about a 2-inch by about a 1-inch on page 5 that said, you know, an individual was seriously hurt outside the bank. And if it was you or if it was me coming out of a bank and somebody with a baseball bat hit us 18 times, that would have been front page news across our country. It would have been, everyone would have been talking about it. But somehow society has this idea that an addict is doing this, that they're used to it or they brought it on. You know, we all hear that, well, if you're going to play with fire, you're going to get burned, or, you know, that kind of thing. But we have to remember that these are people who are loved. They are other people's sons and daughters. They are people that bleed like we do, they cry like we do, and they hurt like we do, but somehow they're not treated like us.
You know, June, I think that, you know, I get really emotional about that when I think about how savage society can be and how disconnected humanity is from one another, that one, something like that could occur to your son or to anybody for that matter. But then for us to be so compassionless to understand that the person, Nathan, for, you know, to give these people in our society a name, Nathan is a good name, but to think that they're no longer human, therefore they don't matter. So it's no big deal anymore because, you know, they've chosen a path that's not the mainstream, and therefore let's not pay it any attention. The hurtful part about that to me is that we can do that to each other and think that that's okay. And I think we've lost ourselves. And I think that in to a large extent, we've lost our connection with each other and the meaning of life. I honour you for coming on and sharing your story. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of the show now, but
Thank you. Tell me,
just in closing, is Nathan okay now?
He is doing remarkably well. He has been clean 3.5 months. The last couple of days, I think he's struggling, but he has stayed clean. And the only time he had ever been clean and sober for a period this long was when he was incarcerated. And so for all parents, you know, there is always hope. Don't give up hope that change can occur. And it may be when we least expect it.
And June, you've been very generous. You've written a book called Addiction, A Mother's Story, and you've been very generous in offering 25 ebooks to our listeners and our viewers. So for everybody who's listening and for everybody who is watching this show, I think it's vital that everybody gets their hands on a copy of this ebook, even for the inspiration that June has gone on to become as a result of this, but also I think for Nathan and for your entire family. I think this is going to be an extraordinary story and a real eye-opener for our viewers. So June, you know, I'd love to continue talking to you about this, and it's an amazing story. You are one hell of a woman, and you are one hell of an inspiration, and I take my hat off to you, my friend. I'm so grateful. You know what? I am so grateful that I created Karen's Couch so that I could have conversations with people like you, because it's people like you that are going to change the world, and I am so honored to be able to be a part of that journey. So thank you for allowing me to facilitate at least what we've been able to produce in this short space of time, a message for somebody who's ready to hear it. So thank you for sharing, and thank you for being on the couch with me today.
Thank you, Karen. And I do keep a blog going, and if your viewers want to ever go on,
yes,
it's www.addictionamotherstory.com, and send me some messages. We're not alone.
We will definitely do that, and we will also make sure that that website is on our website so that people can use it as a link. And I also want to say to everybody that's watching, if you know anybody who is struggling, you know, Australia, certainly in Australia, and I know that every country has their own sources of support, but in Australia, if you are struggling or you know anybody that's struggling, Lifeline is an amazing organization that's set up specifically to support in emergency cases. And of course, here in Australia, we have 000 that you can call, you know, if anything is an emergency. June, you've been amazing. Thank you for sharing your story with us. For everybody that's been listening and watching today's show, I hope it's been inspiring for you. I hope if for everything it's been thought-provoking, that you can see that as humanity and society, we need to be together. We need to connect with each other, and there's a harmony that's missing. Today, for everybody that's listening and watching today, make one commitment to yourself. Is to participate in the harmony of humanity. Make one move, take one step, smile at somebody, put your arm around somebody, tell somebody that you love them, help somebody that's struggling. Do it today, just for one person, and then possibly tomorrow do it for somebody else. And let's start to pay our connectedness with each other. Let's start to pay it forward. Hopefully Karen's Couch has been an inspiration for you today, and it's been thought-provoking. It certainly has been for me. So join us next week on Karen's Couch, because it gets better every week. And I am so grateful, and I get so passionate about what Karen's Couch is being able to provide to humanity. I am so glad that you tune in every week, because it's only, as I said, it's going to get better and better every week with our stories and the message that we're taking to the world. Thank you for being a part of it. And thank you for joining me on the ride, everybody. I'm going to see you next week right here, same place, on Karen's Couch. Bye for now.